Support from Owens Funeral Home at the corner of Elm and University in Champaign. Locally owned and operated and serving families since 1925. Owens Funeral Home invites you to join them in supporting public radio. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Christie Clinic, with offices in Champaign, Urbana, Rantoul, and Mahomet, providing quality health care to the residents of Central Illinois. Support for today's broadcast comes from the Yoga Institute of Champaign-Urbana, offering beginner-level instruction in Iyengar Yoga and special classes for men, women, teens, seniors, healthy heart, plus size, knees, low back, neck, and shoulders. New classes start after Labor Day. Information at 344-YOGA or on the web at yoga-cu.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. On the program today, we will do the first of two programs this week dealing with the issue of same-sex marriage. Obviously, there are sharply divided sets of opinions and views on the subject. That's why we're doing two programs, one with a panel of guests to advance some arguments in favor of same-sex marriage. And then tomorrow morning, in this same hour of the show, we'll have some guests who make arguments against. So you'll have the opportunity to hear from all of them, size up their views, think about how you feel, and of course, as always, make comments, ask questions. It's not particularly a new issue, but one that's been debated, I think, with greater urgency in the months since the state of Massachusetts made same-sex marriage legal. As a response, some people in Congress said they think that the U.S. Constitution should be amended to bar it, and in some states there have been some movements to do the same thing. We'll talk a little bit about some of the issues involved, the legal status of same-sex marriage, and of course take questions from people who are listening. We have three guests here in the studio with us. Royanne Phillips, who is Outreach Associate with Lambda Legal. This is a national organization that's interested in working for civil rights of lesbians, gay men, as well as bisexuals, transgendered people, and people with HIV or AIDS. She is here spending some time in Champaign-Urbana. She's been traveling around the country promoting some discussion of the issue. Also with us in the studio, Jerry Carden and Dixie Spencer. They're both local folks here from Champaign-Urbana. Jerry Carden lives here, and he has been a gay activist and, in fact, went with his partner to Massachusetts to marry. And Dixie Spencer is with us, too. She's a member of a local organization called See You at the Altar, which is an organization that's interested in promoting legal civil marriage for same-sex couples in the state of Illinois. Well, thank you all very much for being here.
Thank you.
We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Just to start, just to review in case anybody is unsure about the legal status of same-sex marriage in the United States, there is, to date, only one state that acknowledges same-sex marriage, and that is the state of Massachusetts.
Correct.
Right? That's right. In addition, there is one state where they have civil unions. And
correct.
That's Vermont. Then there are some other gradations of this going down from there. But on the other side, something like, is it 39 states in law specifically say marriage is something that involves a man and a woman. So there the law officially bans same-sex marriage.
Correct.
Right? Okay. Tell me from your perspective and from the perspective of Lambda Legal, what same-sex marriage is about. Is this for you a straightforward kind of civil rights issue?
It is. It's about an institution which is created by the government, which is marriage, and it's about equal access to that institution for people in same-sex partnerships.
Hmm. Obviously, people in same-sex partnerships could have a relationship. They could publicly acknowledge that. They could have some kind of ceremony to do that. What do you get? And I want to ask essentially the same question of both Jerry and Dixie. But what do you get with being able to be married that you don't get any other way?
Well, when the federal government was passing DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, in 1996, they did a report, an investigation, to find out how many times marriage and marital benefits were in federal law, and that came to about 1,049 benefits. That's on the federal level. There are also a number of state benefits. So we're looking at things like parental rights, the right to establish automatic joint parenting, adoption, custody, visitation. We're also talking about immigration and residency. We're talking about access access to Social Security benefits. We're talking about, in the case of death, a spouse can draw on the Social Security income. They can, in the case of hospitalization, automatically be able to visit. They can automatically take time off of work. There are just a lot of things which come with marriage as an institution, which are now denied to same-sex couples.
Well, let me go, and I want to have Jerry Cardin and Dixie Spencer talk a little bit from your own personal perspective about why for you the ability to marry is an important thing. I don't know. Do you want to go first?
Sure. First, for me, it's a civil rights issue. I'm a citizen of this country. I'm a citizen of this state and should have the same rights as everyone else. But beyond that, it's a community issue. If we're married, there's a recognition there that you don't get from family, from community, beyond the rights. You know, there's a degree of acceptance. People, family even, treat you differently, look at you differently when you're married than when you just live together because you can't get married. Schools look at you differently. I've had problems with schools here in Champaign with my own daughter in trying to involve my partner in my daughter's educational issues. They don't recognize my partner. They want some kind of legal document. Beyond that, I think it's wrong, not wrong. I think it's unfair that same-sex partnerships should have to go to lawyers, pay money to get the same kinds of rights that heterosexual couple gets just by saying we're married. You know, that's not right.
You want to speak to that same issue?
Yeah, I pretty much agree with everything that Dixie said in terms of the civil rights issue and the matters of fairness. It's just not fair. And to use religious perspectives to base law on, that's what's really not fair. And I think that's what really irritates me the most about it. And for my partner, Tim, and myself, we've been together for 23 years. And we never really had thought about getting, quote, married or even having a religious ceremony, which obviously we can do. The Unitarian Universalist Church that we're a member of has supported that since the middle 1980s. But we've never really chosen to do that. And for us, getting married in Massachusetts was a little bit of a lark in terms of we were hearing about everything in the news, about the marriages in San Francisco, civil unions in Vermont. We even talked about going out to San Francisco for a wedding. But we didn't know exactly how long that was going to last and whether we really questioned the legality of those marriages. And as we were talking about a potential trip to San Francisco, I happened to think, well, we're going to be going to Massachusetts for a vacation this summer anyway. We were visiting a lesbian couple that we're very good friends with in Vermont, and we'd already planned a trip to Boston, and it just kind of came to me, oh, the Unitarian Universalist Association is headquartered in Boston. We could get married there by a reverend that works there. And it just kind of all came together for us. And I think for us, it's more of a political statement that we want to get married wherever we can, where it is the, quote, most legal. And even though that doesn't really afford us benefits here back in Illinois, we just feel that even having that piece of paper to put in with our power of attorney and our will and whatever would help show someone in the future, if there is a question as to what our intent is, that it is our intent that we be treated as a legally married couple. Now, right now it doesn't hold any weight, but we don't know what the future holds in terms of, the Supreme Court eventually, if this makes it there, whether there will be, retroactive recognition of marriages that were performed. But for us, it was just, I think it's a political statement and a matter of fairness issue.
I want to ask Royanne, for marriages, same-sex marriages performed in Massachusetts, are they acknowledged anywhere outside of Massachusetts?
They are definitely acknowledged in New York. I believe they're acknowledged in Connecticut. There are a few different places which have said that they will honor the marriages performed elsewhere. New York Attorney General Elliot Spitzer actually made it very clear that he was going to acknowledge, that the state was going to acknowledge marriages performed both in Canada and in Massachusetts and anywhere else that would recognize that legally.
Okay. But Illinois is not one of those places.
Nope. It's not.
Let me give our telephone number. I guess I didn't do that in the beginning because I'm certainly interested in people calling in. If you have comments, you have questions, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Again, our guests, Royanne Phillips. She is outreach coordinator with Lambda Legal. This is a national organization that's interested in advancing the cause of civil rights for gay men and lesbians. Also here in studio, Jerry Carden. He lives here in Champaign-Urbana. He is married. He and his partner were married in Massachusetts. And Dixie Spencer, she's a member of See You at the Altar. That is a local organization that promotes legal civil marriage for same-sex couples in Illinois. Questions are welcome. You can give us a call. I wonder if Jerry and Dixie, have you had personal experiences having to do with discrimination? And I know that Jerry, you were talking about the fact that you and your partner have been together for a long time, now close to 30 years. Is there one example that you can point to that said that there was a way in which you feel you were discriminated against, where a heterosexual couple, there would have been no question that they would have been afforded a particular kind of right, but you and your partner, because you're a same-sex couple, weren't?
Well, I think that happens pretty much every day in terms of the benefits that Royanne was talking about, the 1,049 benefits that are afforded to legally married couples. And some of those things haven't happened to us yet in terms of, survivor benefits or whatever, pensions and passing of property from one to the other. We don't look forward to that day, but we know that it's probably going to be out there for one or the other of us, whoever's going to be left behind. And I just want to make sure that we have those protections at the time that might happen. And it's still something that's kind of cuts to your core, knowing that you don't have those same benefits that heterosexual couples do. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, many more organizations are recognizing family memberships, like the Art Institute in Chicago or the Architecture Association or whatever. Whereas at one point in time, that wasn't even recognized, that you'd have to have individual memberships and those kinds of things. There are little things that are happening within society that, begin to recognize, same-sex couples. But, there's just discrimination, I think, that goes on every day just because we can't do it.
Mm-hmm. And I can think of two or three. One, we lived in Decatur for a while and were outright denied family membership at the YMCA because we were a lesbian couple and not considered a family. Another one is that my partner, I've been a student for a while, and so my partner, through her job, carries the health insurance on both of us through domestic partner benefits. There are two downsides to that. One, every year we have to sign and have notarized an affidavit that says that we're still together and we're going to stay together before they will even grant us access to the insurance. And two, at the end of the year, she gets financially penalized. She's taxed for the premiums that she pays for me to be on her insurance. I don't know any heterosexual couple who's financially penalized or has to sign an affidavit every year to prove that they're going to stay together. If they did, I think we might be in a lot of trouble around here with health insurance, but...
Well, and Dixie's comments reminded me that, that's another way that we're discriminated against, is that my employer does not offer same-sex benefits. And so I can't put Tim on my health insurance, and he's in a profession where he probably would like to go out on his own, and that in a way it's much cheaper for him to be employed by someone else that does have benefits. Hmm. And so the partner benefits is a big issue.
Well, let me come back here to Ryan just for a second, and then we'll get to the calls because we have some. What about something that would not be marriage, but that would acknowledge that there is this legal relationship between the individuals, so that they could have some of these benefits? I mean, would there be some way that we could do that, and yet not cross the line of saying we will make marriage illegal for same-sex couples?
Well, the only reason to deny the word marriage to same-sex couples is discrimination. And so I am not going to argue for any second-class status or secondary institution which is not full and equal benefits, rights, and responsibilities of marriage. Excuse me. I think that there are a number of things that same-sex couples currently do to protect themselves, and these are very, very good things. There are a number of employers, as we've talked about, that offer same-sex benefits, domestic partnership health benefits. And there are a number of companies who also will offer medical leave. There are powers of attorney, medical powers of attorney. There are a number of things that couples can do, but it just doesn't have that full weight. And I think that you also don't get the respect and the recognition without that word, without that institution being your backing from the rest of society. And so the little things will chip away at the relationships. You know, you're going through customs and you're going through two separate lines because you can't be a family. You're doing things like applying for a family membership somewhere. You're signing an affidavit. You're constantly having to prove that this is a commitment that lasts. And these are things that couples that have been together 20 and 30 years have to do, which straight couples, heterosexual couples don't have to do. So I wouldn't argue for a second-class institution. I think that we really need in this society to be full and equal participants in the institution of marriage.
Okay. Well, let's take some calls. Bloomington, Indiana. First up, line number 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Hi, I have 3 quick questions, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
First question, whenever people have been allowed to vote, whenever there has been a referendum in a state and people have been allowed to vote in order to protect the sanctity of marriage and the family, they have overwhelmingly rejected same-sex marriage. The most recent example is in Missouri, where 71% of the people voted to protect the sanctity of man-woman marriage. And only 29% of the people in Missouri are in favor of same-sex marriage. So why shouldn't these people be allowed to vote? Why in the world should courts be allowed to tyrannically impose same-sex marriage on people who don't want it? That's the first question. I have some more.
Well, why don't we just take one at a time?
Yeah, sure.
Let's get a response from the guests.
I think that, first of all, courts are not demanding that people who don't want to be married are going to be married. So I don't know that it's a tyrannical ruling to allow that. I do think that courts have traditionally shown the way when the majority of the people, I mean, the system of checks and balances is set up so that the majority of people don't actually get say over the minority. And so in this case, we're talking about a minority, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered people. And the courts are really showing us the way on that.
Well, that leads me to my second question, because you seem to indicate that if homosexual marriage were allowed, that would not affect heterosexual marriage. The experience in Canada and in the European countries that have approved homosexual marriage, that's not their experience. As a matter of fact, several things happen that are pretty impressive in those countries. First of all, when the homosexuals are given a chance to marry, only about 1.5% of them, I believe these are the Canadian statistics, only about 1.5% of the homosexuals bother to get married. But where they are allowed to get married, the fact that homosexuals are allowed to get married destroys the meaning of marriage. Not many homosexuals get married, but the meaning of marriage is destroyed so that the people who are getting married in those countries would ordinarily get married, don't bother to get married anymore. And in some parts of Europe, after homosexual marriage was approved, out-of-wedlock birth rates have soared to as much as 80%. That is, 80% of the babies being born out of wedlock. Marriage and the family simply being destroyed.
I have difficulty understanding how it is that allowing loving, committed couples to participate in an institution which upholds loving, committed partnerships is going to destroy the sanctity of marriage. I haven't seen studies. I don't believe that there have been studies. And I shudder at the idea of this cause and effect, that one group of people is going to destroy family relationships. I mean, what we're looking for is security for our families.
And related, I would like to add a little comment to that. Related to this issue of support for marriage for same-sex couples, for many, many, many years, ever since I came out as a gay man, I've heard the comment, well, same-sex couples don't last, or same-sex relationships don't last. And there's, you know, been so little societal support for same-sex couples, but yet I know a lot of long-term relationships like mine and Tim's. And they are out there. It's just that they're often not seen or recognized.
Well, that,
and if we were to provide a little bit more societal support for same-sex couples, it would make it easier for relationships to last, and it would make it less likely that someone who is same-sex oriented will get married to somebody of the opposite sex. Because I've known a lot of people, both gay and lesbian, who ended up getting married because of the societal pressure that is put on them. And then it's kind of interesting that after they realize that that marriage won't work and they divorce or they separate, then other people come back on them and say, well, how could you get married and, you know, live a lie and mislead someone else? Well, we have to look at there's no societal support or a very little societal support for people to form partnerships. And it's just interesting. You're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, because we don't want you to form partnerships, but we also don't want you to get married.
Well, no, now that your comment, it leads right into my third question. Some research by two homosexuals, Mattson and McWhorter, you've probably heard of this research. These two people were both psychologists and both homosexuals, and they, by the way, were living together. And they researched, they were trying to research faithful homosexual partners. In other words, is there such a thing as homosexual marriage? If memory serves, I think I've got my figures fairly close to right. They found that the longest lasting homosexual partnership that they could find that was faithful was 5 years. 5 years was the longest that they could find any two homosexual faithful partners. Now there were a number of partnerships, but when investigated, each of the homosexuals admitted that they had had on the average about 8 partners per year. In other words, they weren't being faithful. They were living together all right.
Well, I'm really interested to know who it is exactly they were surveying, because I had the tremendous experience last year of interviewing about 40 same-sex couples and documenting their relationship. And I interviewed couples who were together anywhere from 3 to 50 years. And I think that if there were some research done now, drawing on people from a number of different settings, not just the bars, but also social service organizations, employee affinity groups, lots of different places, that I think that research would show quite differently.
Yeah, I would just like to add that, first of all, my partner and I have been together faithfully 7.5 years, and I think that the faithfulness in a relationship has more to do with the integrity of the individual than it does with the type of the relationship, because many, many heterosexuals' relationships are plagued by unfaithfulness.
I've got some other callers. I want to give you an opportunity, if you wanted to make one last comment, to do that.
I would just say this. Mattson and McWhorter, as I understand, were only investigated male homosexuals. They did not investigate lesbians, but that was their finding. But thank you very much
All right.
for your time, David.
Well, let me – I have a couple of other callers, and I promise I'm not going to wait and make these people wait too long. But I am interested in your reflection on public opinion on this issue. Because surveys, at least those that I have seen, would indicate that well more than half of Americans are opposed to the idea of same-sex marriage. And certainly there have been some votes taken in some states about the issue of amending their state constitution to bar it. And those that seem most people in favor of that, they're in the states where they have had the vote to change their constitution to bar same-sex marriage. So what that says it to me is that more people oppose it than are for it. And my question is, why do you think that is? When we go out there and we do surveys and we have, you know, close to 60% of the people surveying saying, I don't think it's that we should have same-sex marriage. What do you think they are saying?
Two things. One, when you conduct a survey, how you ask the question has everything to do with the response that you get, the type of response you get. Two, I think that it's not indicative necessarily of the way people believe as much as it is of the level of education they have about the issue. So I think the more education, the more understanding people have about the heart of the issue, then you'll begin to see some of these numbers change. And I've seen this happen before. I worked in civil rights, and I've worked in disability rights, and particularly in inclusive education for kids with disabilities, for a number of years. And as we went out and educated folks about what it really meant to put a kid with a disability in a classroom, then they begin to turn around. They begin to be less afraid. They begin to understand. And the support really began to flow. So I think, you know, you're looking at who's putting out the surveys, what are the questions being asked, and how are the questions shaping the responses? Mm-hmm. You know, it says to me there's a huge level of need for education and understanding in this country about this issue.
And I want to add to that because, you know, we're all subject to the sound bites of the news these days, but I believe it was a portion of an NPR report that I heard shortly after the vote in Missouri that the caller was mentioning that a lot of people didn't understand the way that the question was worded, and they didn't realize that they were voting against same-sex marriage. And then they were appalled later when they found out that, oh, my God, I was voting against my friends and relatives who happened to be gay or lesbian. Hmm. And in relationship to support, you know, in my little microcosm of my world here in Urbana, I live and work in Urbana, and I didn't want to make a big deal out about our marriage with my coworkers because I knew that there would be some people that were uncomfortable with it. I'm somewhat an uncomfortable activist, I guess. And, you know, I don't want anybody to, you know, be upset or offended or whatever. And when some people at work found out that we were getting married, they insisted that we do a shower because we always do showers for the heterosexuals' weddings and their baby showers and all those kinds of things. And in fact, we've had a joke that there are those people that don't have the life events that never get the, you know, the events. And they were just fabulous. They, you know, showered us with wonderful gifts and so much support. And that was actually two different work groups that did that. And I was just amazed. And, you know, among my neighbors, or our neighbors, nobody's had a divorce yet that I know of. I don't believe I've destroyed anyone's, you know, opposite-sex marriage. And I've had several opposite-sex couples make that comment to us that, you know, I don't feel threatened at all by your being married. What is that all about? I don't get it.
I think there are a few things people are concerned about. Change is hard for people, and I think it's slow. I think there are not a lot of conversations. One of the reasons we're out here doing the Marriage Equality Bus Tour is so that we can give people an opportunity to share their concerns and to find out what it is we're really looking for. There are a number of people in this country who believe they don't know gay, lesbian, or bi, or trans people, and that's just not the case. I think that we've seen that in places like New Jersey, where these discussions are happening on a regular basis, the public support has gone from close to zero up to 50, 60, 67% of the population in support of marriage equality. And I think that that's no accident. People fear that we are trying to say that faith communities, for example, are going to need to endorse same-sex unions. We're not looking for faith communities to endorse same-sex unions. There are many, many faith communities which already endorse same-sex unions, and they will continue to, whether the law follows or not. There are also a number of faith communities which are not going to endorse same-sex unions, in the same way that many don't endorse interfaith unions or don't endorse a union if you don't go through a particular series of workshops or interviews. And I think we're not looking to change religious institutions in this country. What we're looking for is equal access to an institution which exists to support and protect families.
Right. We are a little bit past our midpoint here. Let me, I want to get on some other callers, and I should introduce again our guests for this part of Focus 580. Roy Ann Phillips. She is Outreach Associate with Lambda Legal. This is a national organization that's interested in working on civil rights issues for gay men and lesbians. Jerry Carden lives here in Champaign-Urbana. He has been a gay activist and married his partner in Massachusetts not too long ago. And also Dixie Spencer. She is member of See You at the Altar. It's a Champaign-Urbana organization promoting legal civil marriage for same-sex couples in the state of Illinois. And I also want to mention to people who are listening that we recognize that there are other views on this subject. And tomorrow morning in the same hour of the show, the 10 o'clock hour, we're going to have another group of guests that will make the case against same-sex marriage. So you'll have the opportunity to hear them, hear those ideas, question them. We want to promote some reasonable discussion on the issue, and that's why we're doing these programs. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455, the numbers. We have some callers who have been very patient, and we'll get on to the next in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm on a cell phone, so if you have trouble hearing me, just let me know.
Okay.
I'd like to thank you all for coming and having this discussion. I think it's incredibly important, not just for homosexual couples, but for any couple, any American to talk about this. I think, first, I'd just like to you know, make a statement about the last caller and say that he's obviously forgetting a few of the central tenets of the scientific method. First off, that correlation does not imply causation. So simply because, you know, homosexual marriage has been approved in a country and, you know, birth, you know, out of wedlock birth has gone up, does not mean that there's any causation in between those two points. Secondly, majority rules is not what democracy is. You know, sometimes there are bigoted majorities that need to be opened up forcibly, or not forcibly, but, you know, need to be educated and say, hey, this is something that you are biased against unjustly. And it's important, you know, justice is an important part of the American Constitution and the American spirit. And, you know, it makes me sad to hear people say things like, you know, a majority is against this, when I think that you'd find a lot of people are not educated and are not aware of the number of people around them that hold views differently than them. My question for you is, I just heard this morning, saw in the news, and I'm not sure where he was speaking, but Dick Cheney did come out and say that he had an opposing view to President Bush, and that he thought that gay marriage was a state's issue. I know that's a little bit of a soft, you know, soft sell thing. He's basically talking around the issue, saying it's a state issue, rather than saying, I believe that people have the right to do whatever. I don't have the full text of what he said, but how important is this, do you think, for him? I know that one of his daughters is gay, but you know, for the community, how important do you think that is, that he's coming out and saying that? And I'd just like to hear your viewpoints on that, and I'll hang up and listen.
All right, thank you for the call. I heard the same quote, and it confused me a little bit, because I wasn't exactly sure what he was saying. But I'm interested in what you think, Ben.
I guess my impression was, and again, it was kind of like the soundbite where I was passing the TV set when I happened to see him being interviewed, and I saw him say that he acknowledged, you know, that his daughter was gay, lesbian, and there's been a lot of issues, I think, within the gay community in terms of her being pretty silent on this issue, and I don't know whether she's been doing a lot of arm twisting behind the scenes to get Dad to acknowledge her or to acknowledge this issue. But in essence, I felt that he was saying that my viewpoints on this are different from the president's.
My understanding was that, and he was speaking in Davenport, Iowa, but my understanding was that he was very proud of both of his daughters, including his lesbian daughter. He spoke about the need for states to be the decision makers on this issue, and he spoke about the fact that there was not enough support in Congress for the constitutional amendment to restrict marriage to between a man and a woman.
What President Bush has said very clearly, and you correct me if I'm misquoting him, he says he thinks he would favor the U.S. Constitution being amended to bar same-sex marriage.
Correct.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mr. Kerry has said, well, he's not particularly in favor of same-sex marriage, but he was not in favor of amending the Constitution. So I don't know if those two positions sort of cancel each other out and mean that this is not particularly an issue or not. I guess my question is, do you think in the presidential contest that we've got going now that the issue of same-sex marriage is going to be an issue?
Well, I think that certain people are trying to make it an issue in terms of focusing away from other issues, right, because they feel that there are so many people in America that are against same-sex marriage. And I really do think that they're mistaken. And I personally believe that Kerry probably is soft-pedaling a little bit on this issue and probably realizes it could be political suicide for him to come out and support same-sex marriage, and so that he's at least going part way and talking about civil unions. I don't know how everyone else feels on that.
I think that for whatever his reasons, Vice President Cheney just made an incredibly affirming statement about the value of family and marriage.
Let's go on to another call. This next person is in Champaign, and it's line two. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. A previous caller addressed some of my concerns raised by the caller before last, like I really question the relevance of an increase of out-of-wedlock births to legal marriage for gays. It's Germany is a pretty open society. I lived there in the 70s, and I don't think that legal marriage for gays has anything to do with a with an increase in out-of-wedlock births. And they also, I think, research was questionable that said there you could the longest marriage or the longest partnership that was faithful was 5 years. That sounds like a very skewed sample to me, and especially if you only did men. Then the issue of minority rights. Just because the majority is against something, there's a lot of mob mentality that's against things. And I believe at the time of the Amistad ship where the slaves had the revolt and they were eventually given their freedom, I think in Massachusetts, the majority was not in favor of, the majority of the populace thought slavery was okay. And, you know, it doesn't make it okay. And the same arguments have been advanced for, were advanced for interracial marriage 100 years ago or even maybe 50 years ago. Well, would you want your daughter to marry one? You know, that sort of thing. All the same arguments because people have fear of the unknown. And you can't be black, usually, and not be noticeable, but you can be gay and keep it hidden. So I'm sure that a lot of people know gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual people and don't really have any idea that they do. And my last point is about marriage in the Bible because the caller before last from Indiana is fond of thumping on the Bible. And he is saying a marriage is between one man and one woman. When did he last look in the Old Testament? Because the Old Testament is full of multiple marriage. It's true, it's not between two men or two women, but it's between one man and numerous wives. You know, the story of Benjamin and Jacob, their father, I can't think. Leah was the mother. Leah and Rachel were the mothers, and their maidservants had children on the laps of their mistress, so it would count as their child. And you know, there's all kinds of stuff like that. And it was in fact a duty of a Jewish man if his brother died and was married, that he was obligated to marry her, to marry his brother's widow, because in that society you could not be a woman alone. So the Bible is not full of one man and one woman. There are a lot of variations on that. So,
all right.
And I'm proud to say I was at the event last night, and there were 110 people there, and it was just a rousing crowd, and it was great. Thanks.
Thanks for the call. I have some other callers, and I want to try to see how many people I can include. Is there anything in particular that you'd like to comment on that the caller had to say? We can just go on and talk to some more.
I would love to hear from other callers.
All right. Well, let's do that. We have someone on the campus there next in line three. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I would like to respond to the gentleman who called in first, talking about the psychologist who did the study. The American Psychological Association just had its annual convention in August, and they've come out with a statement that I thought he might be interested in hearing. The council has expressed opposition to discrimination against lesbian and gay parents, and they found that same-sex and heterosexual couples are remarkably similar, and the parenting effectiveness and children's psychological well-being were unrelated to parental sexual orientation. This group has based its recommendations on research, and I think that this is a little bit more has a little more weight to the issue. And I would like the panel to kind of respond to the difference between, I've heard the word civil marriage and religious marriage, and sort of what is that?
You want us to speak to the difference between civil marriage and religious marriage?
Yes.
I think religious marriage is something which happens within a spiritual or faith community. and it doesn't come along with any sort of rights, benefits, or responsibilities conferred by the government, where civil marriage is a contract that a couple makes with the government, state and ultimately federal government. And that comes with these, you know, we've been tossing around that 1049, which was decided in 96, benefits, but it's actually more like 1138 benefits they've decided since. But that comes with immigration rights. That comes with the opportunity to collect Social Security benefits on a long-term partnership. That comes with a lot of things I think we could, you know, have talked about over the course of the last half hour. Does that clarify?
Right, and all marriages are really civil marriages, right?
Well, yes, although I would say that there are a number of same-sex couples who have entered into holy union and do feel themselves married and are looked upon as married, and yet they have that, they do not have the protection that the law would afford in recognizing that marital status.
Right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's continue. We'll go to a caller here in Westfield. This is our toll-free line. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Marriage is established in God's Word and can only take place between one man and one woman, Genesis 2, 21 through 25, Matthew 19, 4 through 9, was intended by God to produce godly offspring, Malachi 2:15. We are to speak out in truth that homosexuality is biblically wrong and is condemned by God in 1 Corinthians 6 through 9. My question to this couple is here, where do they not understand the Word of God?
I have tremendous respect for people who have a deeply held spiritual faith belief, and I think that's not something I want to disagree with. I think that people can have the spiritual beliefs that they have in this country. This country is founded in part on freedom of religion. I think there are a number of faith communities, a number of religious institutions, Unitarian Universalists certainly, a number of Jewish communities, a number of other Christian communities that do bless the unions of same-sex couples. And this is not at issue here. What's at issue here is civil marriage, is the recognition by the government of a union created between two loving, committed people.
I just want to add one thing. It frightens me when people quote the Bible in a very literal sense, because I have a daughter who was born sterile. And in what you just quoted, according to that, my daughter, who is heterosexual, can never get married because she cannot procreate. I find that extraordinarily frightening in the United States of America.
And even though I was raised in a Christian tradition, I do not espouse Christian principles or beliefs. I believe in a higher power, but I don't believe in that the Bible is an inerrant document. I believe that the religious institutions over the years have always been political. We know that from recent experience, and they certainly have been ever since time immemorial. And I can't trust that things that have been translated over thousands and thousands of different translations from a lot of different ancient languages really were accurate translations. I believe that many of those translations were done at the time in order to control the people, and whatever happened to separation of church and state. I mean, I don't think that this is a discussion we really should even be having, because we are not a religious state.
Well, I don't know. Does the caller want to make any follow-up? Perhaps not. Well,
the Bible, yes, is the most translated, oldest book in print and copied the most number of times, and I cannot understand why these people find that there is a difficulty in understanding the translations that has taken place through the years, because it has been translated and retranslated and retranslated by so many different individuals of different faiths, and they all come up with the same uniform code of living.
All right. Well,
I would take issue with that.
I will have to leave it at that. We'll go on to another caller. This is someone in Bloomington, Illinois. Line number one. Hello.
The present composition of marriage is two people of opposite sexes. Now, if we change the sexual composition of that institution to same sexes, then on what basis do you deny changing the numerical the numerical composition of that institution for or three women or three men or one man and three women. Since one of the guests is also advocating for bisexuals, by definition, you're advocating for allowing three or more people to marry.
There are a number of things to respond to in that. First of all, bisexuality does not mean that a person is going to then make a life partnership with two different people. Bisexuality means that you can be attracted to people of either gender. So in advocating for the rights of bisexual people, we're advocating for the right to commit to and not be discriminated against. But to commit to people of either gender and to not be discriminated against on the basis of that orientation, the bisexual orientation. So that's point number one. Point number two, there has not been conversation about trying to create an institution which is open to more than two people. The conversation is about who it is that has access to this institution.
Well, but if you change the sexual composition, on what basis do you deny changing the numerical composition? This is the United States, and we all like to push the envelope as far as we can, and we all know that people will be asking for that.
What would make anybody think for a second that gay individuals want to change the numeric composition? Maybe that would be proposed by a heterosexual person. I mean, why gays? Why do you presume gays would want to change the numeric composition just because we want to have our loving and affirming relationships acknowledged by our communities?
No, that's absolutely true. If you change the composition the way it is now, you know, what's to stop a polygamist for asking for changing the numerical composition, heterosexual polygamists?
There's nothing preventing other people from asking for that kind of recognition, but again, it's what would people be willing to go toward. And I just think there's so many people that would be against that kind of thing. And right now the debate is about same-sex couples, two partners.
The legal principles are different in each. Now, my background is in education and in theater, not in the law specifically, although I work for Lambda Legal. So I can't tell you exactly what those legal principles are, and I apologize for that. But the legal principles are different in talking about who it is that's allowed to access it, and then in talking about the institution and what that is. And when you talk about the numerical composition, you're talking about a change to the institution. The conversation we're having in this country right now is not about a change to the institution of marriage, but rather about who has access to it.
I'm going to jump in here, and because we don't have very much time, I want to try to get at least one more caller here. But I do, again, just want to make sure that we have answered the question of the caller, because I know that some of the people who are concerned about same-sex marriage, this is the very question that they raise. They say that if you make this argument on a civil rights kind of basis that says you can't, if you have one group of individuals, that is people who are homosexual, you can't discriminate against them. If you say this other group that are straight, they can get married, you can't then say that you, because you're not straight, you can't get married. And if you make that argument that says you're extending the same right to all of those, what you're saying is that you don't necessarily think that that means if a person comes along and says, well, why can't I have two wives? You said this straight couple could get married and this gay couple could get married, so why can't I have two wives? And you're saying that there's that the same argument, the same sort of civil rights argument does not extend.
It's
I don't believe it does.
Arguments.
That's about a change to the actual institution.
Right.
Okay.
And from a civil rights perspective, when we fought to get kids with severe disabilities included in educational environments, public educational environments, we were faced with the same thing. If you let those kids in, pretty soon all the schools are going to turn into mini hospitals because you'll have all these kids who are real involved. The fact is, it just didn't turn out that way. Mm-hmm. You know, I think he's talking about a separate argument down the road. That's a whole other issue.
Okay, let's talk with another caller, Champagne. This is line two. Hello.
Hi there, is this me?
Yes.
I just had to call in from the other caller quoting the Bible. I mean, that is such a minority of people in the world that he's excluding. Such a majority of people in the world he's excluding if he's got that narrow of a definition of marriage. No Asian people can get married because there's so very few Christians that are in the Asian community, you know. Anybody past menopause can't get married. Men with erectile dysfunction can't get married. Adoption is just thrown out the window because God created man and woman to make kids, and I just think that's the most bogus argument I've heard, and I'm sorry if I'm spouting, but I guess I'll let it go with that. Thanks.
All right. Anybody want to comment
along the same lines? I have the problem when the Bible is quoted about anything having to do with same-sex issues, and they're trying to say that, God says homosexuality is wrong, because they don't seem to have the same venom against other issues that this caller just raised in terms of whether or not now it's all escaping me, in terms of working on Sunday, for example. There's one of the major commandments says that thou shalt rest on Sunday, and that people cannot get divorced. And we have a divorce rate of half of the heterosexual marriages that form end in divorce. And the Bible says has words against that, and all kinds of prescriptions. You can't eat shellfish and so on and so forth. But you don't hear people exercising those prescriptions. It just seems to be the ones about homosexuality that get invoked in all these religious discussions. And I just think we shouldn't even be having them in this country.
What we're promoting is not about religion. It's about helping people understand the difference between a legal institution, civil unions, and civil marriages.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with the religious aspect.
Well, I think we're pretty much at the point where we're going to have to stop. And my apologies, we have another caller we can't take. But this is just the first of two shows that we are doing this week to discuss this issue. We'll have another program for you tomorrow morning in the 10 o'clock hour with a completely different set of viewpoints. And again, the opportunity to call in, ask questions, make comments, listen to the guest, hear what they have to say. We'll do that then. Any last sort of thought that you'd like to leave with folks?
I did want to make one more point, because we've bandied about this word civil unions, and I think there is also a misconception about civil unions. Civil unions currently are a state institution. They are not necessarily portable across state lines, and they do not include federal benefits such as immigration or a collection of Social Security insurance or filing of federal taxes. And so I just wanted to point out that disparity, because a lot of people feel that civil unions could replace civil marriage for LGBT people, lesbian, gay, bi, and trans people. And I think civil unions are more like a marriage light.
Okay. Well, there we will leave it, with our thanks to Ryan Phillips. She's Outreach Associate with Lambda Legal. Jerry Carden, he's resident here in Champaign-Urbana, one-time and maybe current gay activist. He and his partner married in Massachusetts not long ago. And Dixie Spencer, she's a member of a local organization, See You at the Altar. They're interested in promoting legal civil marriage for same-sex couples in Illinois. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Our program, Focus 580, made possible in part by a grant from RE/MAX Realty Associates, currently handling over 30% of the real estate sales transactions in Champaign County. 352-5700. Nobody sells more real estate than RE/MAX, and they encourage you to join them in supporting public broadcasting. The program also made possible with support from the Art Mart in the Lincoln Square Mall, Urbana. The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio in East Central Illinois. Coming up a little bit later today, as part of the afternoon magazine, Celeste Quinn will be talking with journalist Nat Hentoff. He began writing for The Village Voice all the way back in 1957. Was a staff writer at The New Yorker for more than 25 years. His writings can be controversial and provocative. Among other things, he is a Jewish atheist. He's a champion of the First Amendment. He's a foe of capital punishment and abortion. He's been a critic of many presidents. He's also a well-known music critic. And his latest book is titled American Music Is. He will be joining Celeste Quinn in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine today for conversation. If you'd like to have the opportunity to talk with him, you can do that. The show itself gets underway at noon here on AM 580 with news and weather and sports and other sorts of things. In the next part of this program, we'll be talking about autism. Our guest will be Lynn Cagle. She is clinical director, founder of the Autism Research Center at University of California at Santa Barbara, and also joining us, Claire Lezebnik. She's a writer. She's a mom of an autistic child, and the two of them have written a book together entitled Overcoming Autism, about some of what we've learned about early intervention for kids with autism and how helpful that can be. More on that in the next part of the show. Right now, we're going to take a break for news and update on the markets. Stay tuned.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety is proud to underwrite agricultural programming on WILL. The center helps